powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacey
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacey Ross.
Here we go now.
All right, talking Mariners with ESPN's Tim Kirkjian. He joins us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Tim, we, an hour ago, Bump and I were just reflecting on what we learned from a few of your colleagues from ESPN over the last 2 weeks. We talked with Jesse Rogers, Buster Olney. We heard from Jeff Passan, and they're all pretty intrigued to see what the Mariners can do this season. So my question for you, are the Mariners just some sexy pick for a surprise team, or is there a real case to be made that they can be pretty competitive?
Yeah, there's a real case to be made. I mean, they made the playoffs 2 years ago. They almost made it last year. They're not a surprise team. They have great starting pitching. Luis Castillo's stuff is unbelievably good. George Kirby's stuff is so good. When he beat the Rangers on the final game of the regular season last year, Chris Young, the Rangers GM, told me that's the best pitch game that we saw from anybody all year. That's how good that guy is. Plus, they have power arms in the bullpen. The big question, are they going to score enough runs to win in a very good division? The Astros are really good. The Rangers are really good. But I think they're more than a surprise pick. I can see them making the playoffs. I can even see them winning the division. But they are not a mirage. This team, if you have starting pitching like they do, you're going to have a chance.
Tim, I'm glad you said that because we're a bit skeptical over here, right? We've been hurt so many times in Seattle, but when guys like you say they look like a playoff team, that makes us feel good, man. You mentioned, will they be able to score enough runs? They made some changes to this lineup. You got Polanco there. Obviously, you have Julio and Ty and Cal. How would you describe this lineup when it comes to the bats?
Well, I think it's certainly better than last year, but not significantly better. And I think it's going to have to get significantly better if they're going to make the playoffs and then do something in October. Polanco's really going to help. And when you have that kind of punch now in the middle infield, that is really helpful. Mitch Haniger coming back is going to help. Mitch Garver can help at DH. He can also catch. He had a really productive year for the Rangers. Brian Anderson's there with Suarez gone. So I like the additions. I like what they did with this team. I'm still not sold that it's a really good offensive team, but it's better than last year, and it had to get better than it was last year.
Julio's obviously a big part of that story, right? I mean, it's funny. We were just saying the other day that we focused on all these, pieces that they added because, of course, they're new guys and you want to get to know them and you want to figure out the X factor. But ultimately, this team goes where Julio takes them. He took them into tying for first place in the division thanks to an unreal August last season. He also had a slow start, and that played into some of their offensive struggles to start the year. I have a big question, Tim, that you're going to maybe initially not know how to answer, but what's his ceiling? It's a big one, right?
I'm not sure there is one. I mean, look at the track record. Look at those first two seasons. It's ridiculous how good he has been. He has been historically good when it comes to power and speed combination, and to do it at his age is amazing. And the reason there is no ceiling is his work ethic, and I know this all sounds corny, is second to none. His level of focus is amazing for a young player. Manny Acton, one of the coaches, told me once that Julio will be in the room with a bunch of teammates, and then all of a sudden he'll just get up and say, I got to go do this. And he'll go work on something because that's what he's doing all the time. And when your best player has that sort of work ethic, everyone else follows. That's why he's the perfect leader for this team in every way.
Tim, last year, Cal was left off a list when it comes to catchers. We were kind of upset. The top 10 catchers in the league, and Cal wasn't on that preseason list. It's just a list, but we felt some kind of way about it. How do you feel about Cal and his potential as catcher and being one of the best in the league?
Yeah, he's definitely a top 10 catcher in the major leagues for me. The fact that he switch hits, the fact that he hits home runs from both sides of the plate, the fact that he's got a really good understanding of what the art of catching is all about, the fact that he's been doing this and has been taught so exceptionally well since he was 7 years old really, really helps. And he's got a great free spirit to him also, meaning you can joke around about his big butt and everything else. And instead of being upset, he can laugh with us about it. That also shows, you know, a real genuine nature to him. I mean, he's a really good player. And when you have a catcher that can hit 25 homers, that is a huge boost for any team, especially for a team that has some issues with production everywhere else. They're not going to have issues with production behind the plate.
It feels like one of the conversations we've been having, Tim, is, well, look, at the top of this division with those three teams, Astros, Rangers, and Mariners, it may be close all year long because that's how they ended the season. And maybe the key for Seattle will just be to start faster than they have the last two seasons so that you don't give the Astros a chance to pull so far ahead. Unfortunately, it's baseball, right? Sometimes you start way behind and then you pick things up. It's 162 games, but do you see that as maybe one key for the Mariners to win the division, that they start a little faster? Or maybe you have a different one, but what are maybe one or two of those keys?
Yeah, that is really important because when you look at, say, the Rangers, if they can somehow get their way through the first two, three, maybe even 4 months, and then they get Scherzer and DeGrom back. Right. And I'm not suggesting they're going to come back and be great again, but what if they are? You better get ahead of them early because, in theory, they could be really good late. And the Houston is in a similar situation. I mean, Justin Verlander is going to start the season on the injured list. They have some other pitchers who are hurt or TD. Even Javier hasn't thrown as well as they would have hoped. And Lance McCullers isn't going to pitch for them maybe at all this year. You better get the Astros early also because when Verlander and the rest of the health in that rotation comes back, they're going to be a handful also. So I think you're right. Getting off to a good start is always important. But when you know the Astros and Rangers might be finishers, strong finishers as opposed to strong starters, the Mariners better get off to a good start.
Tim, when I hear the Rangers and the Astros, all I think of development with the Astros, obviously they go and get some guys too, but then going and spending with the Rangers. And then there's a situation here in Seattle. Do you think fans out here overreact a bit to the amounts that the Mariners have been willing to spend to go get talent? Or do you like their approach of just trying to find their kind of guys to fill up this roster?
Well, let's face it. They are not a huge market team like some of these other teams are. They can't just go out and do what the Mets or even the Rangers or even the Astros do. But I like their recent approach. I like them looking for things. But, you know, when you're a Mariner fan and you've never won the World Series and you've only been to the playoffs once since 2001, it's okay to be skeptical. It's okay to question. But I think they're going in the right direction. I like the direction of the team. And I repeat, with that kind of starting pitching, it's hard not to like at least being a solid contender for the division and a wild card.
Hey, Tim, you know that concept of, like, explain it to me like I'm five?
Yes, baseball is really good at that. I have to explain things to myself
Perfect.
Like I'm five because the game is so beautiful and so unpredictable. I slap my head 10 times a day. Like, how did that happen? Why didn't I see that coming? So, Okay. Yes, go ahead.
Okay. I have an explain it to me like I'm five request, but it's specifically about regional sports networks and just kind of what's happening with that businessy side of baseball. It's been a storyline for the Mariners, and you don't have to know exactly what's going on with the Mariners and Root Sports and everything here, but in baseball in general, can you kind of explain what the issue has been with RSNs?
Well, I'm not good at this. I'm really not good at the
it's
business end
request.
Of this. I will tell you that I'm much better at watching the games being played, but obviously this is all about money, and baseball, to me, has become a regional game. It's no longer our national pastime, meaning when the Rangers are in the World Series against the Diamondbacks, there are a lot of people in L.A., let's say, or New York that don't care anymore, which makes local baseball so important. This is why so many national networks have had trouble, because everyone's watching their local broadcast. And that's why the local broadcasts have to be better than ever, because that's what Mariner fans are watching. That's what Pirate fans are watching. That's what Nationals and Orioles fans are watching. They need every game to be on TV. They need to know where to find it. And that's been a real problem now with the RSNs and all sorts of other issues that we have. And it's a young man's game, too. Like, for me, I can't even find stuff on my own television at home. And they're my own TV. So we need to make it easier, and we need to make our fans easier for our fans to be able to watch their team every single game. And it's frustrating beyond words for them and for me from a distance when people tell me, I can't watch the Dodger games. I don't have the right – I'm in the wrong place, or we're blacked out. That's unacceptable in today's day and age.
I agree 100% with you, Tim. And, man, there's no way we're going to have you on this show, and I wasn't going to ask you about the biggest story in baseball right now. And it's Shohei Ohtani and the whole deal with his interpreter. I have so many questions, and we don't have the answers, right, because we're still waiting for a lot of the facts and the investigation to really conclude. What do you make of this whole situation? Do you think it's damaged Ohtani's reputation at all? And how do you think MLB is going to handle this thing?
Well, I think MLB is going to have to make a thorough and complete investigation, because everybody is now watching what's going to happen here. And because the federal government is already involved on this, Major League Baseball can't just say, all right, we don't have enough evidence. That's it. This story is over. If the feds are in on it, Major League Baseball pretty much has to follow what the feds uncover. And there's a pretty good chance the feds are going to uncover more than anybody else, because that's what they do. So has this damaged his reputation? I would say yes, but I will tell you, I watched him speak the other day, and I was a little surprised at how forthcoming he was, how direct he was, how blunt he was, how emotional he was. I thought he was just going to get up there and read some canned PR statement, look down, never look up. He actually spoke to the crowd. He actually looked at people and spoke, and I think it was genuine. Now, exactly how much can we believe from that? That's one of the million questions. I found him mostly believable. I found him mostly convincing, but we've got a lot more questions to ask, and until we're allowed to ask questions, we're never going to get close to the bottom of the story.
Tim, last question for me. I love your newest project, because I love when families can have like just feel good projects going on. You launched Is This a Great Game or What? A podcast with your son, Jeff, this week. What went into that idea? How'd you guys collaborate on this, and how's it going so far?
Well, my son and I are best friends. He's always said, Dad, we got to work together somehow. And this seems like the best opportunity to do it. So this is going to be a joyful, playful, fun hour once a week. We're going to talk about baseball. We're going to talk about fathers and sons. We're going to poke fun at each other. There's not going to be a whole lot of heavy lifting here. We're going to enjoy ourselves, and I think we should do that, because that's our nature, both of us. And it's a dream come true for a proud dad here. And the first episode drops tomorrow. Then we'll do it every Tuesday. Every time we do it, I drive from Maryland, my house, to Philadelphia. It's like 3 hours.
Oh God.
In order to tape in his basement, because he is a magician with technology. And I have trouble figuring out how to use my cell phone, even as a phone. So I need to be next to him for anything technical. Otherwise, I'm just a tired, old, sad little man sitting in my office not figuring out things. So this is why we're doing it. I hope it's fun, and I hope people enjoy it.
Okay, so you guys, first episode drops tomorrow, just in time for opening day. And by the way, I will let you know, Tim, I hope that your son, from you making that drive, is at least making you up some nice dinner or something when you go there. And secondly, don't feel alone. I have to help my dad with his phone all the time. We got him a new iPhone, and it was too much. So he went back to, an old one. It was a little too much technology for him. So love a family project. It's very cool, you guys. It's Is This a Great Game or What? From Tim and Jeff Kirkjian. Thanks so much, Tim. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Tim.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Talk to you soon.
See ya. Let's get to four down territory.
This is Four Down Territory, going inside the game. What former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver Michael Bumpus.
First down, what team is under the most pressure in the NFC despite recent success?
I know what you're thinking.
Yeah.
49ers.
Yeah, I was thinking the 49ers.
Right, but
yeah,
it's not the 49ers. Okay. I think Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch, they're good to go. Their relationship is strong. As long as they win divisions and at least contend for a Super Bowl, they'll be fine. I'm looking at the Philadelphia Eagles, and it's crazy because they've won 34 games over the past three seasons. That's fifth most behind Kansas City, Dallas, San Francisco, and the Bills. They got two new coordinators this year. You got Kellen Moore, the OC. You got Nick Fangio, who pretty much said, look, Desai, you were one of my mentees. I'm going to take this thing over and run this defense. Their offensive stats the last three seasons are a couple of them. 26 points per game, that's fourth in the league. 48% on third down, that's third in the league. They've had all pro selections. A.J. Brown, 2023 and 2020. Lane Johnson in 2022. Kelsey in 21 and 22. And then Jordan Mailata, excuse me, in 2023. One division championship, NFC championship, one Super Bowl appearance. That's a heck of a resume. But you look at these guys and you say, Nick Sirianni, you're on the hot seat. The way you ended that season last year was all bad for you guys. But they got better this year. Bring over linebacker Devin White. You bring over edge rusher Bryce Huff. You got Saquon Barkley. You got C.J. Gardner-Johnson. When you look at this football team, the last 3 years, you look at what they've done this year to get better, they should be contenders. But if they do not end the season strong, if they do not at least get to the NFC Championship game, Sirianni's going to have some explaining to do. Way too much talent over there for them not to have success this year. It's all about perception. They could have had the same year, not the same year, but ended the year on a high note and got blown out in the playoffs like they did. And they say, all right, man, things happen. Let's move on. Mm-hmm. When you lose, what, 6 out of 7 to end the season, you limp into the playoffs, and you let my guy Baker Mayfield just blow you out, there are some things that need to be done. But they've had a good offseason. I'm looking at this team, and I go, if they don't look good this year, Sirianni's going to get the boot because there's a lot of talent over there. Watch out for the Philadelphia Eagles and see what they do.
I do wonder how they might be feeling the loss of Jason Kelce, obviously, at center. Yeah. Because he was someone that was effective into the final season of his career. It's not like there was a drop-off, and it's like, eventually they moved mm-hmm. on. You could see a sudden shift, and you've wondered whether the tush-push is going to look quite the same or be quite as effective.
Right. It's Kelce left on top. That dude was still moving.
Yeah,
he could have played at least 2 or 3 more.
Second down. The preseason is a time for coaches to evaluate their teams and construct their rosters. But what else should it be used for?
I just went on a full rant about this. And then I'm going to say, well, this is how you fix it. All the rule changes that people are crying and complaining about. Just try it out in the preseason. Just try it in the preseason. Try the kickoff. Try the hip drop. And do it in the 2024 preseason, and then if it works out, you feel like you have control of everything, use it in 2025. I think the flaw behind this is that people feel like they're blindsided. Like, what? Just going to throw these rules into the game right now? And I understand people's frustration, but I'm going to give you a hard time because rules are rules. Just adjust and move on. But you got to give these coaches an opportunity to try to coach you. Now you're just getting thrown into the situation and saying, we shall see. But there are good coaches in the NFL, and they'll figure out some things. You use the preseason to see who's going to make the team, who's not going to make the team. Are there any surprises? Use the preseason as a trial period for these rules, and I think you'll have a better grasp on what you can control and what you can't control. Are these referees capable of identifying a hip drop? Are they capable of looking at this review when it comes to intentional grounding and saying, all right, that wasn't intentional grounding, we're good to go? Just warm up. Warm the car up before you start to drive that thing. And I think the public will probably receive it a bit better. Also, the defensive players that I hear just being furious about it. I understand your frustration. But again, man, just adjust, be a professional, and move on.
Third down. Who will become one of the NFL's most dangerous players with the new kickoff rules? You better not be saying D, Eskridge.
Nah, not D. Not D. Even though, you know what? D, hey, D, I got your back, dog. If there's anybody in this town
That's
who has your
true.
Back,
That's
it is me.
That's actually true.
So I'm hoping for big things for him, and I think this actually adds value to him when it comes to this Seahawks roster. But I'm talking about Cordarrelle Patterson, my guy who is one of the greatest returners of all time. It's crazy. He's been in the league, 10, 11 years? He's in an era where towards the end of the kickoff era where guys were having these big returns and putting up these big numbers, and then it kind of dies out, and he's weathered the storm, and now he is back. He has 9 kick returns for a touchdown. He has 13,000 all-purpose yards, 3 seasons with 1,000 yards in the return game. He's a 4-time Pro Bowler. A guy like Patterson value just shot up. So I believe he's with the Atlanta Falcons now, or signed a new deal with the Falcons. He's back in the game. A versatile player like him who can run the football, he can receive the football, he can return that thing, just got a lot of value. So if you're looking for guys in the draft towards the end whose stock just went up, look for those guys who are good at the return game, because this year they're going to have a chance to have an impact in the game again. I'm glad that they're modifying the kickoff rule just to see what happens. It's not going to be perfect. It's going to look weird. You're going to have to adjust. The one thing I like about it is that you can actually scheme this thing up too. With the players only 5 yards apart, man, you can down block and pull a guy and try to create gaps. It's almost like a run play. If you get by that first wave of dudes, it's wide open for you. I like this rule. I like that they're trying it, but I like that it brings guys like Patterson back into the mix when it comes to just being explosive players.
And he is, except for when he's putting up like 200 all-purpose yards against the Seahawks, a really, really fun player.
Yeah.
There's a lot of really fun players that are that kind of versatile, like Swiss Army knife type player. And I always think of the 49ers, you know, whether it's Juszczyk, who is great as a pass catcher and as a blocker, whether it's, of course, Deebo Samuel. Who's one of the better players? Like, if you could pluck a Swiss Army knife player from around the league and be like, man, this guy is so incredibly versatile, he gives you more options as a team. Would it be Deebo?
Deebo's...
He's not
the most versatile player in the game right now. I mean, obviously the easy pick is Christian McCaffrey, but they're not going to put him back there to return kicks. But if you are in a pinch late in the game and you need a return, you put a guy like Christian McCaffrey out there. I think running backs are becoming probably the more versatile type of guys in this league. Running backs and tight ends, but running backs do a little bit of everything.
Fourth down. I thought this was... maybe the most interesting question of the four, and I can't wait to hear your answer. What quarterback's in a fragile moment in his career, but still has a lot left in the tank?
It's Kyler Murray. He's had an interesting career, man. He's a two-time Pro Bowler. He has multiple seasons over 3,000 yards, seasons of 24-plus touchdowns. In 2022, he played in 11 games, and then in 2023, he played in 8 games. There's no denying the talent that Kyler Murray has, but at some point, teams start to think about the future. And I think after this year, I think they're thinking about the future already in Arizona. With the number 4 pick, if Kyler Murray weren't coming off the injury that he had, and if he didn't battle back the way that he did at the end of the season, I think they'd be looking at a quarterback with that number 4 pick. But because he has gas left in the tank, I think they're going to go get him a receiver in Marvin Harrison. If he's not able to get it done with Marvin Harrison, what is Gannon going to do? He has to go and get his guy. And if Kyler Murray's not there in 2025, he's still going to be a good quarterback in this league. But at some point, franchises decide to move on. Been in the league 5 years, the fastest 5 years I feel like I've ever seen out of a quarterback. But I'm looking at Kyler Murray and I go, look, man, all right, there's been questions about his leadership, about his work ethic, but he showed you last year that he will battle back and play for nothing, because there's no reason for him to come back last year knowing that the Cardinals were not going to make the playoffs. This is going to be an interesting year for him, but you got to equip him with the weapons. They get him a tight end a couple drafts ago. You got to go get Marvin Harrison now, but you're playing in one of the toughest divisions in football, I think, because I know the Niners are going to be good, the Rams are going to be good, and I'm banking on the Seahawks taking a step forward. They're not the AFC North. They are king in this league, but this is a weird play for Kyler Murray, because I'm not sure what his future holds for him. I know this year is going to be a big one for him.
You're right, in the Arizona in general is generally overlooked. Like, when we as Seahawks fans talk about who we're looking at, we always look at the 49ers, but the Rams were a playoff team last year and the Seahawks were not. Meanwhile, you're right, Kyler Murray was quietly improving at the end of last season. I mean, this division in general's stacked.
Yeah, stacked. And correction, Patterson signed with the Steelers. He was with the Falcons.
Steelers.
He's with the Steelers.
Man.
Crazy.
It's, I know that I'm spoiling it a bit, but Trey Wingo, you mentioned he tweeted out that he's going to be on the show later today, and he tweeted out that the Steelers might have had the most interesting offseason. We've talked a lot about the Eagles offseason, and you've liked what the Commanders have done as well, but the Steelers have some very interesting pieces they've added, and that's headlined by Russell Wilson, wondering what he could become, but man.
They got Russell, they got Justin, you got Queen over there, Patterson joined him, like Mike Williams went over there.
Yeah,
the Steelers, they had to get their arsenal right, because we talk about the toughest division in ball, they're in that thing.
You're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. Coming up next, Caitlin Clark gets a big offer from a celebrity, and a player keeps it painfully honest with a reporter. Timeline coming your way.
This is The Timeline
with Bump and Stacey,
brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It is the timeline on Bump and Stacey, reading you the top stories you're going to see and hear about on your own timeline. So let's go ahead and get to our first. College football insider John Canzano reports that Wazoo and Oregon State are nearing a deal with the CW to televise their home games in 2024. Canzano said the CW networks believed to be the primary broadcast partner. They were in extended talks with the Pac-12 as recently as a week ago. So he reached out to Oregon State and Washington State. They didn't respond after he was seeking comment or an answer about it. So right now the goal is just to find some kind of network at all. He said the CW is carried on 203 stations. It covers almost 100% of the United States households. So Washington State and Oregon State's road football games against Mountain West Conference teams will be broadcast on Fox and CBS as part of that league deal.
It don't sound bad. Honestly, no. when I think of CW, I think of old shows and watching Michael Jordan and the Bulls back in the day growing up. And then I started looking at just what they offer now. And then after reading this article, I feel better about the situation. Obviously, when you hear the name, you don't think, oh, that's a major network.
I think Vampire Diaries.
Exactly. Was Dawson Creek playing on that too? I don't know. I just think of those type of, like, you know, shows. But then you look at on the road, they'll be on CBS and ABC, and I think that's crucial right there, because you still want to get in front of as many people as possible. And then you see the numbers that 203 stations that cover almost 100% of the United States. Mm-hmm. That's a better deal than the Pac-12 network, even though it might not be the most attractive deal when it comes to home games. But on the road, Mountain West teams, it's good, man. Just get eyes watching Washington State football. Hopefully we put a good product out there for people to kind of buy into what we're doing. But no, I'm fine with it. I'm just glad something is getting done and we're not just sitting there waiting still.
And honestly, the Pac-12 wouldn't even be the only conference to get a deal with the CW. The CW announced a deal with the ACC that'll run through 2026 and 2027. They also have rights for LIV Golf and NASCAR. So yeah, it's not an ideal world. I remember when we were talking when the Pac-12 was a more complete conference before it completely fell into disarray about the CW as an option, and we were like, oh my God, that's where we are right now?
Yeah.
But considering that there are two schools left in the conference, that's not a bad spot to be.
No, it's not a bad spot to be. Visibility, and it's going to be easier for people to watch these games. I'm all for it. Glad it's getting done.
Ice Cube's Big Three League has offered Caitlin Clark $5 million to play 8 regular season games and a possible 2 playoff games. If you were Caitlin Clark, would you do it?
Over the WNBA, when does the season run? Is that the same time?
So it would be...
It looks like she'd still be able to play in the WNBA.
Yeah.
Oh yeah,
he
easy.
Said. Although he said that his league is a better alternative for WNBA athletes to make money during the off season, so they don't have to travel. So it's this versus going to...
Going like to Russia.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a... heck of a deal. She'll get paid more here than in the WNBA. $5 million, I believe. Yes, I'm definitely doing it. Caitlin Clark is the hottest name in college basketball right now. You have to jump on it while you can, man. I'm definitely taking this deal. I'm getting that WNBA money. I'm staying home and not having to travel.
That's 10 games for $5 million guaranteed. And from TMZ, we're also told she would get substantial additional compensation for merchandising and sponsorships. And the Big Three would obviously still allow her to play in the WNBA since it would be opposite seasons.
Now, would there be, I mean, I don't question her basketball skill, but she'd be going up against guys who are like newly retired NBA players.
Set a screen, get her open.
Yeah. Shoot, man.
She's
got range for days.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be really.
Is there more to lose or gain for her by doing
this? Well, it depends. If you're someone that likes Caitlin Clark no matter what, it's just more Caitlin Clark. If you're someone that fundamentally thinks women's basketball, women athletes are boring and they can't compete with men, which, by the way, like, yes, men and women athletes are oftentimes built different. If you're someone who, like, just looks for opportunities to be right about that, then you'll probably be proven right. She's not going to go in there and, like, lead that league and be the best player ever. That doesn't mean that she's not a phenomenal athlete.
She's going to be able to compete.
Yeah, why don't you see it as just more of a good athlete?
That's all you're looking for, just compete. She's not going to go out there and look like she don't belong. Is she going to be able to back down a power forward into the block? Nah, that's not her game anyway. She's a perimeter type of player who can get to the rack. Let her play on the perimeter. Nah, she'll be fine.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect way to say it. Like, if you if you know basketball, if you enjoy watching her, if you just enjoy watching the game in general, then it's fine and it's good news for her. I guess it's the only way it's bad news and that people that she shouldn't be caring about in the first place are going to think.
Get the bag.
Yeah.
$5 million.
Following last night's loss, Sacramento Kings star De'Aaron Fox was very blunt with a local reporter on how he feels about doing post-game press conferences.
For quite a while now, you've come out and you know, addressed like some of your bigger and you know, maybe more difficult losses. Is this like something you're kind of making a point of doing for some reason in turn, you know, just leading this team and kind of showing that accountability? And
as far as talking to y'all?
Yeah, just, you know.
I don't get out of that. I don't get nothing out of that. They ask me, I do it.
But for the team, so it really doesn't mean anything in terms of.
They don't give a f- if I come up here and talk, I tell you that. But nah, I mean, if Michael asked me, I did. If Michael or Shannon asked me, I do it.
Okay, well, they're
good. Yeah, I get no joy in this after a win or a loss. My team doesn't care if I come up here in a blowout win or a blowout loss, so.
Sorry I brought it up.
I mean, it is what it is.
Obviously, it ends good-natured. I don't think this guy's, like, dunking on a reporter to be mean. And I think that reporter was just saying, does it ever mean anything to your teammates? Do you think that you take really public accountability? I think that it sounds worse than it really is.
Man.
But it's kind of funny.
I love this response.
I do
because
too.
It really doesn't matter. Now, there are times where... me growing up a Laker fan, where you listen to Phil Jackson, and he's clearly trying to get a message to his players through the media. I think this new age of athlete doesn't need the media to get any message across. There's social media. They can control what they want to be put out there. That's just him being a good employee and saying, if you want me to talk, I'm going to talk. But it's more about the conversations I have with the guys in the locker room and outside the facility. So, no, I love this answer. And I'm glad that he did it in a way that was candid, but also didn't make the reporter feel like he asked a dumb question.
No, and I'm sure he knows that. I would assume that reporter is like a beat writer who's there regularly. But I kind of like the little add-on of like, you don't get anything from it?
Nah.
You don't get anything from it at all? Not even a little bit? All right, last story here. NCAA President Charlie Baker says he's trying to remove college prop bets from all betting markets. This is the statement part of it. So he said they've been working to deal with the number of threats from student athletes and professional athletes getting harassed by banning college prop bets. So they're drawing the line on sports betting to protect student athletes and protect the integrity of the game. Issues across the country these last several days show there's more work to be done. I don't know. Just for him, he feels there are sports betting issues on the rise, and he wants to find ways to protect student athletes, presumably coaches as well.
Yeah, it ain't going nowhere.
Yeah.
There's too much money in it. It's not going anywhere. But what you can do are try to find ways to protect these guys and these women, these athletes. Because it gets a little crazy, man. You get Uncle Ricky, too much to drink, messed up his parlay. He's going to have something to say courtside yelling at these athletes, which I think is ridiculous. But you've opened up the floodgates. Mm-hmm. Betting is not going anywhere. There's too much money in it, but you have to do something to protect these guys. What is that? I don't know. What are you going to do, ban somebody from going to a game who you know has a bet on this game? No, that really creates the atmosphere, a hyped atmosphere or tougher teams on the road. It's a messy situation. There's never going to be an exact science to this thing. But if you're trying to protect, I think that's what people are kind of looking for. But betting that ain't going nowhere.
Do you guys think that Baker is secretly trying to keep, even though he will not outright say it, he's secretly also trying to keep athletes from getting involved in any kind of betting scandals because their own statistics, which would be part of proposition bets, are what they can control?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's not saying it outright, but he's like, oh, another thing is...
Well, I think this is interesting, too, coming off the heels of the Jontay Porter scandal in the NBA where he is alleged to have, sandbagged a little bit and...
And you can control that. So instead of just a bet about your team wins or loses, if it's, well, you know, I took the under on me getting, at least 12 points.
Well, and let's say you're a kid that doesn't have a huge NIL deal and you want to make some money quick... Like, you miss a rebound here or there. Mm-hmm. You throw a pass out of bounds here or there. Like,
right.
Ultimately, that might not have a huge impact on the outcome of the game, but if you see that your over-under total is 3.5 rebounds for that night, like, And why would you want to do anything to, you know, impact that?
Exactly. And what Baker's proposing is that those individual stats that you can bet on are just removed entirely from gambling. Like Bump said, it's not happening. It's not going anywhere. But I think it is low-key a way to also keep athletes from doing it or even being tempted to do it. 24 hours later, Bump's going to tell us what he has to say about Pat Chun's departure. Then Trey Wingo joins us to talk about the NFL free agency and what the Hawks could do in the draft. Don't go anywhere.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
Going to spend a few minutes on this before we bring on Trey Wingo, who's going to join us to talk about rule changes in the NFL, what we get wrong in the draft, all kinds of fun stuff. Can't wait for that conversation. Before we get to it, though, it's been about 24 hours since the announcement of Pat Chun's departure from Washington State to take over the open athletic director position with rival Washington. And initially, there was a lot of shock from people. There was a lot of calls for him being a traitor. And, you know, we kind of tried to make sense of it since the news broke on air. We kind of had to react in real time. But it's 24 hours later, so I'm curious to know now how Bump, both you and listeners feel. You guys can join this conversation on the Mac and Jack's text line, 866-979-3776. All kinds of stuff here to break down, Bump, including going to a rival school, whether or not, you know, you just shouldn't do it, whether or not it's fair. What do you think now, 24 hours later?
When I was in college, we played the Apple Cup, and there were a couple guys that I played with had graduated the year before my senior year. In my senior year, we played in a Husky Stadium, and I see those same players, SGAs on University of Washington. And initially I go, man, what the heck is going on, man? Why are you over there? But then they say, look, Wazoo didn't give me an opportunity. UW gave me an opportunity. One of the best athletes in WSU history, track and field, Jeshua Anderson, is now the sprint coach at the University of Washington. Why do you think those guys went to University of Washington? Because they gave them an opportunity. I don't know what the situation was like at Washington State. Maybe it wasn't the deal that they wanted, but you make decisions based off of what's good for you. I'm all over Twitter last night, or X, and Instagram and Facebook, just kind of getting the feel for what people are going through. And a lot of people feel betrayed. And the reason why they feel betrayed is because you went to the one school that you were speaking out against as far as the demise of the Pac-12 conference. Mm-hmm. The team that when Pat spoke at these events, how, you know, always threw shade at him. There was a rivalry there. And I think that's fair. When you are wearing the colors, when you represent those colors, you got to be all in. And if you're not all in, people are going to feel that and you become not authentic. And there's nothing in my heart that makes me think that Pat wasn't authentic when it comes to being a Coug and what it meant to be a Coug. What messes it all up is just how the Pac-12 fell fell. And we always put a lot of responsibility on UW and Oregon because UCLA and USC left, but we're like, okay, fine, we can handle that. We need our two big dogs to stay here and get this thing going. And they leave and everyone else follows and we speak out against this. And UW is trying to get money that they don't have the rights to. Mm-hmm. And there's a battle going on. There's lawsuits and everything. And Pat was kind of in the forefront of that whole thing. He was a spokesperson. So to see that person go to the rival school, the school that we place a lot of responsibility on for the fall of the Pac-12, it makes sense why people are upset about it. And I don't agree with you, but I'm also not mad at you for being upset, because I've had to make tough decisions in my life about where I'm working, who I'm associated with. And it might not have been the popular decision, but it was the best decision for me and my family. And that's the way I view that. With the way that college sports is going, as far as coaches leaving all the time, which has always been happening, ADs leaving, which has always been happening, and players leaving, which is something new, this is just the way college sports is at this point. And this is just the exclamation point, especially for a school like Washington State that doesn't have the resources, doesn't have the collective and the funding that all these other schools have. And you feel like you're just a stepping stone university. And for the most part, that's what Washington State is for a lot of these people. I think a guy like Jay Digger is going to be at Wazoo for the next 4 or 5 years. So I'm not telling you how to feel. You be mad and you look at the situation the way that you want to. Me personally, I look at this as business decisions. And when Pat took this job, the Pac-12 was in a different place. And you took this job being the AD at a Power 5 school. Kyle Smith took this job being the head coach at a Power 5 school. That is no longer the situation. So because that situation has changed, I understand why people are jumping ship. It hurts, but I understand it. I also think that he just made his life a bit more difficult over there in Pullman. I hope he gets out safely, because the anger and the rage that I see online is wild right now.
I did yesterday see a lot from listeners of traitor and like, oh, I'm so angry. But then I saw a lot of people saying, look, whatever Pat Chun does, he does. Like, you know, maybe an athletic director going stings less than like a star player or your favorite coach or whatever. But it was more of like a, what do I do if I feel dejected? Like if I'm a Coug or if I'm an Oregon State fan, a fan of one of these two schools left in a conference that's now completely been decimated. Well, now my AD's gone and now my men's hoops coach is gone after this great season. And like, I just feel so defeated was almost just as common a sentiment. And someone, in fact, asked you like, well, Bump, what do I do now?
You feel those feels and you move on, because there's nothing going to be able to do with it. There's nothing going to be able to do. It's offers. He had a better offer on the table. It happened to be from the school on the other side of the mountains. And they've gone through their own stress and trauma this year as well. And it won't be the last time. It won't be the last time an AD leaves WSU for a different school. It won't be the last time one of our coaches leaves for a different school. I think if you can just wrap your head around just what college sports is, I think you can feel a bit better about this whole situation.
Yeah.
But you're right, man. It's difficult to see a guy kind of in the forefront of this us against the world type movement and then go to the school that, you know, was, we feel, responsible for the demise of the Pack. But again, business. It's business. Look at it that way. I'm taking a check. If I want to coach college football and Wazoo doesn't give me a shot and UW gives me a shot, I'd go coach their receivers at UW. Don't mean I don't love my Cougs. It means that they're going to offer me a bag and to do something I love and support my family. I'm going to consider it if Wazoo's not going
to
do that.
It is a rare move for an AD to do this. And Curtis, you said he's going to speak tomorrow, a scheduled press conference?
At 10 a.m.
Okay, so we will have at least some sound if that's there, if there's something notable. It's just that you see ADs moving all the time, coaches moving all the time. To go to a rival is always just, it's rare. It's not super common. It'll be interesting to hear what Pat has to say about that. Trey Wingo joins us next. Don't go anywhere.